from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Yes! Fresh Fridays. Good morning. It's the G and Ursula Show. Good morning to you, Ursula.
Good morning, G. Happy Fresh Friday to everybody. This is a big, big show today. We have some very special guests coming up this hour, including Seattle's mayor. And then after Heather's newscast at 10:30, if you didn't get a chance to see the dramatic video, it is on our Facebook page. And we're going to have a chance to hear from the two SPD Harbor Patrol officers who were involved in that dramatic rescue of a toddler and four adults on Lake Washington on Wednesday when we had that windstorm.
Who else we got in the water?
It was incredible, and thankfully everyone was able to be rescued. And again, we're going to be talking to the two officers.
Wait.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to that.
Can't
but
wait.
Right now,
Straight Talk with Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell.
Straight Talk with G and Ursula. I'm in.
Only on the G and Ursula Show.
And this is something that we also always look forward to. Good morning, Mayor Harrell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. So as always, we want to start with something very positive. So we're going to talk about the One Seattle Day of Service, which is tomorrow from 9 to noon. Cleanup events all over the city. G, Chef, and I are going to be joined by some of our listeners at Westlake Park. We're going to be cleaning up trash. But there are hundreds of events in almost every neighborhood. And Mayor, it was so hard to find ones to volunteer for because so many people were filling up the spots. You got to be happy about that.
Extremely happy. Nearly 4,000 people have signed up across about 125 events. We have about 100 or so volunteer sites run by community-based organizations and neighborhood groups. And again, it demonstrates what we've known, and that is that Seattle are filled with people with big hearts willing to help solve problems. So we're real pleased with the response we've gotten.
So I just heard from one of our favorite businesses downtown, and she said she wanted to make sure that we thank you for the cleanup that is going on. But I want to talk to you about the return of city workers, because that is also critical for downtown. And when you've spoken with us in the past, you said you want to clean up the city and you want people back, city workers back. What percentage of city workers are back in the office right now?
Well, we have almost close to 90%. Yesterday, I had a department-wide, cabinet-wide meeting that would consist of over 30 department heads talking about the issue of getting our employees back and just having a conversation what that will look like and can look like. We recognize that, you know, COVID did demonstrate to us that work flexibility is critical and people can do their work from, you know, home and use virtual products such as, well, I don't want to name any of the products. There's plenty of them there.
Yes.
So we want to allow for some of that. And we understand that that's okay. That's maybe a gift that this pandemic has given us, the ability to work a little more virtually, but there's data that's come out about sometimes you develop the culture and the rhythm of an organization and creative ideas and synergies when people are in person. And we want to capture that. So we're having conversations now with all our department heads. We're coming out with some plans. And, you know, we want downtown to be vibrant and active. And you can't do that over the Internet. So we have a lot of employees back. And we're looking forward to having even more back in the very near future.
Okay, just a quick follow-up to that. So you said 90%. Is that 90% full-time or 90% just hybrid? And then is there any concern on your part that you may have to force people who don't want to come back to the office where you feel like they should be to quit?
Well, it's sort of a hybrid. Remember, we've always had about 60 to 65% already doing their jobs in person. We've had, you know, our frontline workers that never took a break. And so, and regarding mandating people coming back, well, you know, part of my job are to inspire and motivate. And so I don't like using terms like mandate. That's sort of off-putting. I do have certain charter responsibilities and powers as mayor. So I'm going to stay away from the word mandate. And let me just say strongly motivate people to get back.
Recently, Mayor,
I'm waiting for you to.
Wait, hold on.
Wait, gee.
Wait, my questions are real simple, Mayor. I want to talk about this, though. I want to talk about Woodland Park. Recently in Woodland Park, over the last 4 months, there was the clearing of about 40 tents and structures that ended up happening last week. After that, there were 80 people connected to shelter or housing, becoming the largest number of people connected with shelter and housing during an encampment clearing. How did that happen?
Well, to be honest with you, we don't take victory laps, but we are motivated. We work 7 days a week, collaboration with departments, our police department, our SPU, Seattle Department of Transportation employees, our care teams, the reach organization. We get to know each person individually, know them by name, look at their needs. But we also realize that we want to protect our parks and our sidewalks. And so we work collaboratively, but we also are decisive. And so, and I will share with you, I'm a Husky. I'm not an Ohio State Buckeye where they make mistakes and they make excuses. We don't make excuses here. I'm not trying to be personal with you, G, but I'm just calling
fighting out words.
That what we had to do was we had to build the systems again of making sure we had available space. We that our outreach workers were putting in the hard work before we start removing people, such that, we know Seattle's fairly liberal and progressive, and they don't want to criminalize poverty. Neither do I. So we think our approach is what's going to be sustainable and it's going to get our city on the right track.
You said that addressing homelessness at Woodland Park was a major priority for your first days in office. So with that being said, what are your next top areas that you want to address? Because you said Woodland Park was your priority. What's next?
Well, good question. The first thing I should make it clear is that the unified care team, they work and they help us identify areas. That's part of what we do. So what I'm going to produce at the end of this month, right around the May 30th, 31st time frame, is I want everyone to see what we see. Where are the tents? Where have we removed people? So we're going to produce I call it a heat map, with dots and graphics on there so people could see the hand that I've been dealt. So, and if you scroll on that particular dot, if you will, and I've looked at a sample or beta test, it will tell you how many people or tents are in that certain area. And, I said, gee, many times we're going to be openly transparent with this city on what we're dealing with. And people deserve that. So when you ask what's next, we will also prepare within this dashboard to the criteria by which we measure this stuff. Because I was asked yesterday, well, Harold, are you focusing in on the north end? Which would beg the question, are we to the detriment of downtown or the south end or West Seattle? No. We have objective criteria by which we will measure certain areas. And so and that was hard to do, by the way. Do we just go to where the highest number of tents are or people are complaining the most? So we developed the algebra for us to determine where to focus next, and we'll produce that in about 2 weeks.
And so you've said you found alternative housing. I've got to tell you, Mayor, as someone who drives I-5 pretty frequently and going from downtown to North Seattle, I have seen many more tents along the freeway as well. Are some of these people just moving to the freeway?
Well, Ursula, that's a good question, because very recently, and by that I mean in the last week or so, the Governor Inslee and folks at the state, we in Seattle have really gotten their attention, because not just the encampments, but the graffiti and the conditions along the freeway. And so I've charged a team here to work very closely with the state, because that is my concern, that we don't own that property. And by the way, that's not a safe place for anyone to live.
Exactly.
Those are horrid conditions. And so, and I have to ask the great people of Seattle to bear with us a little bit while we attack the areas along the state to make sure people are housed and kept warm. So that very well could be the case, Ursula, that we're seeing an increase in numbers along the state right-of-ways, which is not acceptable by any stretch of the imagination.
Mayor, I want to switch over to public safety. You, just in the past week, hired a consulting firm to look for the potential next chief of Seattle Police, and you also announced the committee who will be leading this search. In an earlier interview with us, though, you said you have a great relationship with Interim Chief Adrian Diaz. Some people believe you may have already selected your chief, and maybe this is just a foregone conclusion and you're going through the motions of doing this selection. If you could respond to that.
Sure.
And then also, if that's not the case, what are the qualities that you need from this next chief?
So just by way of background, and not to, I hope this doesn't sound boastful, but I take interviewing people extremely seriously. I mean, I am what's called SHRM certified in HR principles. I know employment law quite well, and I've participated in literally hundreds of 360 degree interviews for people. This thing is not wired. I know we had a lot of work to do with Chief Diaz while I decided how to go about this search. And we have put people on the search committee, I think 14 or 15 people who are strong-minded, objective people who will look at this criteria very seriously and make recommendations. Following that, there will be another assessor committee to look at objective criteria. So it's not wired. And the person I'm looking for, he or she, will command the room and make everyone know that we have the right person in charge, that they will not only embrace effective public safety, they will not inspire a racialized or militarized approach. They will understand our culture, but they'll also know I need and demand 7-minute response times. I need and will have more officers. They have to be an expert in recruiting with me as well. So I have high expectations, a strong vision for what this city needs, and that will be my final selection.
Why is recruiting struggling? Why is recruiting struggling for SPD?
Well, first, and I'm basing my answer, G, on what I'm talking to the officers. And everywhere I go, I talk to the officers, rank and file and command staff. Number one, they are clearly demoralized. They don't feel appreciated. This, you know, they have options. And they're saying, well, if I'm not appreciated, I really want to protect and serve. You know, I'll do this somewhere else, number one. Number two, I think that, you know, they're human beings first, and being under a consent decree and being scrutinized with almost the assumption that they're doing things wrong, that's not a pleasant work environment. So we're going to look at those issues and how we could change that, and we're also going to look at practical tools such as tuition assistance, English as a second language types of candidates, looking if they have spouses or significant others to see if we could help them with relocation monies or job possibilities outside of the city. So we're going to try to make a great package. I think you all know I spend a lot of time with the council members to have them release monies for us to create incentive packages. And so I'm working real collaboratively with the council. I had council member Strauss at Woodland Park doing a press release with us yesterday. So, you know, my goal, again, is to make sure that this city is functioning even outside of my department, which would be the legislative department and the municipal court judges. I spent just a couple of weeks ago, we had a lunch with all of the judges except one. One had a personal conflict, an hour and a half long lunch talking about how we could work collaboratively to make sure our city's on the right track. So our officers are outstanding officers, and we have to recognize that. We have to hold them up. And we have to help them build trust. And they will help us identify those areas where we need to improve. And I believe that, and that's my job.
When you talk about moral, the support for SPD, the Seattle Police Department, does that really have a lingering effect of maybe not so much the public, but so much maybe the past administration and or Seattle City Council? Maybe that was a little bit of where that disconnection, lack of transparency, lack of talking about things, lack of feeling appreciated. You think some of that had a lingering effect?
Well, you know, I will let others have their opinion on that. All I could do is control G moving forward. And I've just never spent a lot of energy in my life looking at others and criticizing others. Mm. You know, I got my hair cut this morning and
it looked good.
It was, well, I might modestly say he outdid himself.
Sorry, Mayor, but that was a good one.
I was hoping I could have been in the studio this morning, but unfortunately I had to take it over the radio, so you could see the results of his.
Who cut your hair? You have Earl cut your hair?
No, Earl can't touch this. Nate, hair salon on the south end of Seattle.
Okay.
Anyway, and now I gave Nate, and Nate's probably listening right now. He's a former Marine, and he does my wife's hair as well. Let me get to the point. I was saying I would love to be in the blame game. I'm the executive of the city, and certainly I will take my criticize and blame it. I said, well, heck, who can I blame? Let me. And I'm not going to blame my predecessor or the former city council or the current city council. It's my responsibility not to blame, but to move forward. So that's just always been my attitude in life, and it served me well.
Mayor, so I'm looking at the numbers of police officers who have been recruited in this year. Do you think it's still realistic to say you're going to get 100 new officers each year?
Yes, and it's impressive. And so someone will quote me in a year and say, well, you only got 86. And so, okay, so I set my standard high. We're looking at two ways here, Ursula. One is the new recruit. That person that is, perhaps they're looking for a job and this is their opportunity, and we send them through the academy. And then the lateral transfer that would come from another state or another city outside of Seattle. So we have a twofold strategy. I just met with the chief recruiter, a delightful police officer with a lot of experience last week. I met yesterday with three officers in my office to say, why did you join? Two of them had come from historically black colleges. And I said, why did you join the force? Why did you come to Seattle? And so we're picking their minds to see what incentivized the person to come here to Seattle. And in our package that we're developing here that we'll have finished in about 3 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, to present to the council, we'll talk about what that looks like. And I'm not, don't quote me on the 2 to 3 weeks plan, because I have my team working on that. So it's a soft 2 to 3 weeks, but we're looking at that package and what that should look like.
Mayor, we're going to see you tomorrow. Are we going to see you tomorrow?
Yeah. Yes. And I'm going to be wearing my blue One Seattle shirt. And I want to thank you and the both of you and I hope to see you at Westlake Park.
Yes, we're there.
I know you're going to be there, and there should be hopefully, 8,900 people there. And this is not going to be one off. And again, we didn't have enough spots for everyone. We still have a high demand. And it just goes to show, this is why when I'm out of town, I've met with Mayor Breed from San Francisco, Mayor Schaaf. I met with Mayor Kenny in Philadelphia. This city is one of the greatest cities in this country, if not the greatest. I believe that. So this demonstrates that. We're going to get on the right track.
When you said Mayor Schaaf, is that Richard Roundtree?
Schaaf, S-H-A-F. Oakland, California, who has 3 Golden State Championship rings on her hand.
I'm just making sure.
Oh, that's fantastic. Mayor Peril, we love having you on. Appreciate it. Love that you answer all our questions, and we'll have some more for the next time. But we'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow with that fresh haircut, Mayor.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate you. That is Mayor Bruce Harrell. One thing I like about the mayor, his confidence. I mean, it doesn't matter what you're talking about. How's your haircut?
Outdid
himself. Am I mean? Please, Chef, hold that comment. Nate must do some good haircuts. Coming up next, Ursula, you teased it best. What we have and who's coming up next. I cannot wait to talk to these heroes.
Well, they are heroes, and we don't talk about the good stuff enough. And here is a great opportunity, a big rescue, and we're going to hear from the 2 SPD Harbor Patrol officers who were involved.
Jeter.
Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show. Think back to Wednesday's windstorm. I can't remember feeling strong winds like that in a very, very long time. Trees and power lines were blowing over. And in the middle of that crazy storm, an inflatable raft with 2 adults and a toddler capsized on Lake Washington near the I-90 bridge.
It's down about mid-bridge of I-90. Robert 1, they're taking on water.
Robert 1, they are now bailing out.
The video is dramatic. We have posted it on our G and Ursula Show Facebook page. Officers from SPD's Harbor Patrol pulled a toddler and eventually four adults out of the water because there were some good Samaritans who also capsized their boat while trying to help. SPD Harbor Patrol officers Ken Turner and Kyle Galbraith join us right now. And first of all, we want to say thank you so much for joining us on the show. And I want to start with Kyle, if we could. Bring us back to that moment. You arrive at the scene, and what are you thinking and what are you doing?
We arrived in our fast response boat, and I mean, I guess the most deceiving part about that is like how bad the waves are. I know like the video doesn't like give the best representation of like how choppy it was there, but I could see Officer Turner at the bow. He was taking the toddler off of the Mount Baker rowing crew boat that had gone out there to help them. And actually, in fact, those two coaches need to get some recognition too. I can't remember their name, but they actually the ones were that had that toddler on the boat and kept him safe until we got there. Then we had to assist them as well. It's pretty bad up against the bridge when you got winds like that.
Officer Ken Turner, look, man, I saw the waves. I know maybe the waves don't do it justice on video. But the first thing I thought was, oh, my goodness, this is amazing what I'm seeing. Officer Turner, is there any part of you that thought to yourself, this could possibly be it?
Good morning. Of course, you always have that thought when you have inclement weather and you have people in the water. But when we arrived on the scene, our main concern is to be able to account for and save those that need help.
But even at the risk of knowing that possibly this could be it for you, like this could be once you jump in, you try to go and save someone. This is just what I'm thinking, that yes, you're trying to save someone, but you do know that you are putting your life in harm's way. And I guess for me, seeing it on video firsthand was amazing.
Well, that's what we sign up to do. Of course, when you're sitting, idle, you think about things like that. But when it happens, you don't really have a whole lot of time to think about, I could drown here. You just kind of jump into action. And I think that's what we did yesterday.
Not only were the waves crazy, but also that water is cold. And just talk about the dangers of being out there in a storm like that.
Yeah, well, the water here in Seattle area is always cold. Anything under 59 degrees is considered cold water. And you can survive, they say, up to 20 minutes in cold water. However, when it's below 59 degrees, and I think it's currently around hovering between 52 and 55 on Lake Washington, anytime you're in that type of water for anything over 5 minutes, your body starts to lose temperature. And, obviously we normally are around 98 degrees, but if you go 95 and below, you're considered in hypothermia. And in that type of water, in that cold, it doesn't take long to get there. The blood leaves your extremities and goes and pools around your vital organs. It's very hard for you to be able to use your arms and legs to kick, and you have basically no dexterity. So it's even hard to hold on to something when your body temperature drops below a certain degree.
What's the conversation, Kyle, after? What are you guys talking about after something like that, that amazing heroics that we all see, the people that you rescued? What are you guys talking about?
I think we got back to the station and we were talking about how I think we actually needed a probably, maybe a third person to give us a hand, but we just.
But you guys are stretched.
I was at the helm of the boat and like I'm running to the front of the boat to grab the child and put him in the back, and then we're getting tossed around and we probably could have had a third person, Yeah, you just never know how bad it is. Like, I know when they left Mount Baker Rowing Club, that water down there was nice and calm. it wasn't choppy. But once that south wind or whatever direction is blowing, once you start getting out in the middle of the lake, that's when it starts getting bad. And they probably just got out there and had no idea that what they were heading into.
And I was going to bring that up because I know a lot of people listening right now are saying, what is a toddler doing in the middle of a storm on an inflatable raft on Lake Washington?
But just what I said, they just didn't. It was the water was totally different down at the south end of the lake. It was not choppy like that. So they probably thought they were okay.
Right, exactly. So I and I'm glad you brought that up because I know that that is going through a lot of people's minds right now. But here's my question for you: as someone, both of you work Harbor Patrol. We're going into the summer months, warm season months. Here's your chance to make your plea or whatever it is that you want our listeners right now. If they're going to be boating this summer, what do you want them to hear?
Well, it's kind of like the same, you know, being prepared for the water, being prepared for that, you know, weather can change on the lake and having the right equipment. It could be a hot, sunny day. But then, like, you know, like it was sunny that day. It wasn't overcast. So it's like deceiving on what could, you know, later in the day, what could come. So it's always just having a life jacket that fits. You know, we noticed that the one gentleman, like, his life jacket was way too small. It wasn't even, you know, it was barely keeping above the water. Obviously learning how to swim, having extra clothing for not just carrying shorts, but carrying jackets and sweatshirts.
And remembering that water is very cold.
Mm. Yeah, and then just having the right boat equipment. You know, it's some people, I guess maybe boaters get irritated if we stop them and we go through like this checklist that we do. And, you know, maybe it's kind of like a pain, but you know, some boaters are like, oh, I didn't realize I didn't have that, or I didn't have this. So, you know, we try to, it might be an inconvenience, but when we stop you just to do a quick boater's safety check, it's just it is to help them, because there might be stuff they don't have that you need.
Well, before you guys get going, I gotta ask this, because usually, Ken, when I get done with auctions on a Friday or Saturday night, I'm all hyped up, I'm going crazy. So when I get home, it takes me a long time to wind down. My fiance's like, you're too wound up. How long? Y'all, this happened on Wednesday. What time did y'all go to sleep?
Well, we work a 24-hour shift, so, you know, we're up quite a bit during our tour duty.
Wow.
And you asked earlier what was the feeling after the life-saving event. It was high fives to know that there were five people out there that could have possibly, you know, not been here today. It's a good feeling when you're able to save someone. But sometimes you can't. You don't save everyone, and sometimes it's a recovery, and that's very unfortunate. And Officer Calbreath kind of hit on a few bullet points, and I just kind of wanted to reinforce some of that. You know, just make sure if you're out on the water, obtain your boater safety education card. Take swimming lessons if you don't already know how to swim. Wear a life jacket. That's the most important, if I can give that. Have proper protective clothing, i.e. foul weather gear. Avoid alcohol if you can. Check the water temperature. Check the weather before you go. Know the local laws and regulations. Stock the right safety equipment and keep it properly maintained. And don't overload your boat. If you end up going in the water, the main thing you need to do is try to stay calm. If you are close enough to shore, try to swim, you know, to shore. If you're too far away, try to call out, but try to remain calm, because if you can remain calm and control your breathing, you have a better chance of surviving that incident. And it's easier to spot a boat than a person in the water. When someone goes in the water, you can be half a mile away from them and you can't see them, especially if there's a lot of waves, wave action going on. So again, if I can emphasize, always have a life vest and always wear it. That's one of the most important things out there. We often have people in the summertime when we do recoveries, unfortunately, sometimes the witnesses will say, or friends or family members say, that person was a strong swimmer. And again, when it's when the water's cold like that, you know, it doesn't take long for you to lose dexterity and the movement of your limbs, and it can be very difficult to swim.
We really appreciate you guys taking the time to join us. Thank you. Thank you for putting your lives on the line for what you did the other day and for what you continue to do. I appreciate that. And I know you don't want to say it or brag, but where can I get my Ken and Kyle t-shirts at?
What I will say is that Seattle Police Department is looking for good officers. So if you know anyone out there that's interested in doing this job, please look into it. It is a difficult job, and sometimes, you know, we get a bad rap, but it's a great job. And we need good people on the department. So and if you, I could plug that, would
yes,
be great.
Absolutely. We love that. And you are great officers. We are giving you high fives to SPD Harbor Patrol officers Ken Turner and Kyle Galbraith. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
I just want to take a picture for the gram. Y'all take care now. Be safe. Coming up next, we kind of do scenarios. We'll do that next. We'll kind of go over and finish this discussion. Gene Urson. It is the G and Ursa Show. Okay, don't be mad. Don't be mad. We ain't got time to do... Oh, excuse me. I'm on radio now. We don't have time to do scenarios during this time. But we will do scenarios at 11:30 today.
Which means you'll even have more time for scenarios.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it'll be the way to go into the weekend.
But we do have time to recap that interview that we just did. You want to talk about Mayor Bruce Harrell or those amazing officers, Ken and Kyle?
Well, I'm going to... Because we've had a chance to talk about Mayor Harrell before, so no offense to the mayor, who we assume we'll be seeing tomorrow. But I just want to talk about Harbor Patrol officers, and I love sharing these positive stories.
Facts.
And that was a positive story. And again, look at the video. And I just love both of them are so humble. And they didn't want to, you know, I'm sure they cringe at the idea, heroic. But I love to hear that, you know what, they were giving high fives themselves. Because, yes, that could have turned out very, very differently.
Mm-hmm.
And we shouldn't forget the kinds of situations that officers put themselves into to save other lives. And that is a perfect example.
Yeah, one of the questions that I did ask, and like I said, it has to do with me on Friday nights and Saturday nights. After I've done an auction, my adrenaline is going. I seriously, when I get home, I cannot go to sleep. That's just doing an auction as an auctioneer. Imagine saving someone's life. And so at first, Kyle was cool about it. Like, well, you know, yeah, we just, you know, kind of got through it. My man, Ken came through, was like, oh, it was high fives all around. We saved some lives.
And I hope that people use that as also encouragement that, yes, this is a profession that I want to get into. And yes, I can make a difference. Mm-hmm. And so we're happy to be sharing those stories, too.
Yes, yes. Good for them. Ken and Kyle, KK on the T-shirts. Hey, coming up next, it will be time for Agree to Disagree. We're looking forward to you hanging out with us in 11 o'clock hours. Gene Urson.